Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Multi-Usiverse podcast. My name is Gar Punnett, Chief Strategy Officer at Reaply. You might be noticing if you're viewing this actually now that we are doing a little bit of a different intro. Andrew and I forgot to cut the intro when we did the interview yesterday with Andy DeLisi of Envirotech. We got to have a great conversation around the furniture industry, what it's like from a circular capacity with refurbishment and remanufacturing, what changes we need to actually see in the industry to see more growth from a circularity perspective, and really what could we be doing differently when we start thinking about planning around spaces and planning around our facilities with our office infrastructure. Great conversation as he breaks it down for us. Please enjoy. Thanks for joining us here, Andy. You're here in town because of NeoCon, a big furniture design type of conference. I know very little about it. I only go and participate because I love looking at pretty things. Can you tell the people why you're here? Tell more of them about, you know, the organization that you're with and sort of the work that you're doing.
Yeah, my name is Andy DeLisi. I work for a company called Envirotech. I'm very, very much excited to be back in Chicago. It's been 2 years of not being at a NeoCon and not being in my favorite city. And so it's just awesome to be back. And to see what's going on at NeoCon, which is really the premier furniture conference in the world, I would say, is very helpful for companies like us to understand what the trends are in office furniture and in commercial furniture. Especially after such a challenging time like COVID. And what our company does is a little bit different than a traditional furniture manufacturer or dealer, in the sense that we're the largest remanufacturer of high-end product in Canada. And we've been doing it for 25 years. And it's been an amazing 2 years, crazy to say, because, I mean, we can talk about it a little later, but there has been a shift in the way that not only we're thinking about the workplace, but the way we're thinking about the products we're putting into that workplace. And really from a sustainable side of things, more organizations are doing things differently.
What have you seen in terms of an evolutionary change for people or for companies that are now responding potentially a little bit differently to this option?
So the biggest change is that the majority of clients who would come and purchase furniture from us would be looking for something that they need cost-effective, first and foremost. No one was coming because we are more sustainable.
Right.
It's, oh, I can get basically a Herman Miller, a Steelcase, a Hayworth-grade product, but it's 50% less. There's a lot of companies out there that were looking to take advantage of that. Two is how fast we can produce it. Mm. It's only since COVID that more and more organizations came to us specifically because we proved it with a life cycle analysis that we did on our products. But the conversation around reuse, around circular economy, it seemed like it was a period where it was just buzzwords. And then certain companies said, well, how do we actually start implementing this? And what does that actually mean? And are there companies that do this and that could do this for us? And so we've just done a project for 900 remanufactured workstations. Hmm. And it was required on the tender. They're starting to rewrite tenders to say, well, look, we need to have a percentage that needs to be reused or remanufactured.
A tender being an offer that a company is saying for business.
A tender would be like...
For the listeners, yes.
Sorry. So a tender would come out where they'd invite certain vendors to bid on a project. So let's say it's a government project. A tender goes out and they go, these are the specifications we need to fit out this office. Hmm. And they're usually standard. And then everyone kind of can pull their products and say, okay, Steelcase is going to do this. Hayworth is going to do this. Herman Miller will do this. But for the most part, they're meeting the spec. Now they're rewriting certain tenders so that they're saying what our client wants or what this project requires is a remanufactured component. And now all the other vendors have to go, well, where are we going to get that from?
Fascinating.
And so that's a very interesting shift that has happened, and elements of it are happening across the board.
Why, you mentioned COVID specifically. Yeah. I've talked about on LinkedIn, or I've mentioned in others in passing at conferences about how, again, this is, as we saw, kind of post-2008, which was like almost a great
surge of innovation, a great priority around new business models. This seems like coming, or as we sort of dealt with challenges around supply chains, or that this is a great time to reevaluate one's business. Are you all finding that? Is this a time where it's like, oh, wait, we can actually change what has been status quo and start thinking about this a little bit differently? Why COVID in terms of that?
It's a great question.
That period of time, yeah.
It seemed like there was a period during COVID when it's almost like, so we're in a crisis.
Yep.
And then I think what started happening is that people realized there's other crisis on the horizon.
Yeah.
The climate crisis could be even worse, let's just say.
Okay? Exactly.
I don't know if COVID caused that, but there was a period, I want to say it was in late 2020, when everyone started coming out, large organizations saying we're going to be net zero. Remember this whole thing?
Yeah, totally.
LinkedIn just blew up. One day it's like every single company announces by 2050, we're net zero. By 2040. Okay.
Yep.
Great. Then some of them started putting plans together, and then they were looking at, well, where's our carbon footprint coming from? How can we actually reduce it? And I think that's really what fueled the fire a bit.
Well, and for many of those, a low-hanging fruit are the pieces of infrastructure that are located within their offices.
Yep.
And it's like, why not think about that a little bit differently? They were almost forced to as well, probably because of remote workforce, of which some, I'm sure, companies that you all are getting are probably thinking about how are we supplying furniture, office infrastructure, workspace infrastructure to our remote workforce. That's fascinating, because then that, again, that's now in direct conflict of what has been the status quo, which is just, no, everyone shows up, everyone sits in the same stuff.
Right.
But now it's like, all right, how do we actually start to create a system in which maybe we can take back from a decentralized model of a remote workforce, or just trying to figure out how to actually supply those people that are at their homes, or figure out what to do with the stuff that's in the office. It is that great almost reshuffle, that great rethink of what has been a priority at the office. I know we've seen that. I mean, we've seen an element from a technology part where there's now an opportunity to think a little bit differently. And it was that simple almost gap of time where they were like, wait, now we see that there's a problem, that now we can actually start to think of innovative solutions, to your point, to solve potential crises to come.
Right.
Supply chain crises, carbon crisis in general, of trying to sort of rethink their own supply chains from a scope 3 emission standpoint, that might be the case.
Reshuffling is a great way of putting it,
okay.
Right? Like there is tons of reshuffling happening right now, and there's a lot of opportunity that comes out of that. I mean, crisis always does spur action, right? The birth, I think, of what they consider in some ways the birth of the sustainability movement was after the oil crisis, right?
Yep.
That's when it all started, when it was a different mentality of not measuring carbon. It was, we don't have enough of this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so let's save it, right?
Yeah.
And that's when they started making buildings more energy efficient to try and just, you know.
It's a great point. So this is what? So coming out of the 70s.
Eerily similar to what we're going through. But that's what, you know, spawned this birth of sustainability. But the funny thing is that it was when it's a crisis, you're not always thinking about it holistically. So what happened when they started jumping into fixing these buildings to, you know, minimize heat loss and heat gain and make them tight, basically, everyone got sick building syndrome, right? And then so for years, buildings got, you know, worse in some ways. And there's a lot of growth period and figuring out. And then, you know, well building comes along in the last, you know, 5 years. And that's what I worry sometimes about, especially reshuffling.
That pendulum swing.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we know people are going to be decommissioning office space. People are getting rid of space. It's happening. But a lot of people are still building out new space. But they might not need the same space in 2 years or a year or 3 years. And so that shuffling is going to keep happening. And how we respond to that, how companies respond to that now, hopefully isn't short-sighted. Hopefully we can think of it as a whole and create solutions that are going to stand the test of time, basically.
draw out a little playbook, I would say, for the project. So those that are thinking of their space, what to do with it in the future, or maybe there's an immediate need coming up now. Could you draw out like a little bit of what you see most often and what you can do immediately to help start preparing yourself for the right moves that you should be making that have a little bit more forethought to them? And then, if you wouldn't mind, speak a little bit more generally on what is this, as an industry, how should we be thinking about the stuff that we are owning? What should we be setting up or building into our tenders or our RFPs or whatever might be at a larger organization in which they can start to say, hey, this is no longer this might be generous, but a 5 to 7 year depreciation cycle on this furniture, but instead we want to think of the furniture we're about to buy on a 20-year depreciation cycle. Or what does that mean to you all in the industry? Short-term, long-term, then?
Well, it's tricky. So it's almost like the model itself has to change to really generate the most significant impact. Mm. The model being that, you know, people are talking of furniture as a service type model, right?
Right.
That is a great model. It's just executing it is very difficult, mostly because, and this is where guys like you can come in, right? Mostly because let's say we sell our product as a service, and whoever is, I guess, managing that product on the client side, they might not be there in a year, 2 years, 3 years. We might not have a platform or a software where we're able to transition to easily manage it and then take back and repair and reuse, right? And so it's almost like the ease of furniture as a service. No one's jumping on from a furniture manufacturer or vendor side of things, right?
Yep.
The model has to change, right? But other than that, the best thing that you can do now short term is that a lot of people are reconfiguring space. 90% of the projects are reconfiguring space because they have too many desks and not enough collaboration area. Ooh. Right? Because
that's probably what they're finding the most, which is if people are going to come in, it's going to be mostly about working with others when they do come in.
I think it should be. Okay. Like, people, you're going to want to have different areas of your workspace, right, for sure.
Yeah.
But are we cramming as many people as we can to sit on, you know, 4-foot benching stations?
Right.
Probably not. But again, I don't know. And like, no one knows. We're all taking a guess
all
right now.
Figuring it out.
And so the best thing you can do is if you're reconfiguring, if you're, you know, decommissioning, building out new, going through the process of basically rethinking your space, well then think, even though it might be short term, you need it quickly, think long term about a partner or a solution that is going to grow with you. Mm. And that's really where we find value for our clients, is that we do offer everything under one roof, where we do sustainable decommissions, we do buybacks, we do trade-ins, we do upgrades, we do reconfiguring, we sell new as well, because you can't currently get everything as a remanufactured product.
Hmm.
If more projects started requiring as a tender, there'd
be a lot more volume of...
Well, then the innovation would happen, I think, a little bit more quickly than it currently is.
Yeah.
And that's the exciting part, is that like we want to make it where it's a no brainer of why every project should have at least a percentage of reuse, remanufacturing on it.
Yeah.
And if that starts happening across North America, other vendors and partners are going to take note, and that's just going to move, you know, the dial that much further in terms of more circular solutions. We don't want to be the only guy that does this.
We'd love it
if everyone started, you know, integrating programs and this really caught on, because there's so much potential in it.
Yeah. Can you speak to the new stuff that you all often have to, like, what I'm trying to better understand is what type of stuff lasts? What type of items are you seeing the most of in a refurbishment or remanufacturing capacity, and then what stuff does need to be integrated in as new? Are we talking components, whole goods, like chair, like what stuff, what's the mix roughly, to give people a picture of what they're expecting the future, or the present is now, and what the future could look like as we push this?
Okay, so remanufacturing works primarily best, I'm going to say, the way we do it is based on the strength of great manufacturing.
Right.
So fast furniture is a problem.
Mm.
It's cheap. It's not made well. And therefore, if someone's going to try and reuse or even look at remanufacturing it, there's no way you're going to be offering a warranty on that because it's going to fall apart.
Hmm.
It's not made to last. And therefore, what we look for in products that we remanufacture and refurbish is the grade A manufacturers. That's how we're able to offer like OEM warranties on our product that we stand by. And that's the big differentiator between like a used furniture.
OEMs being original equipment manufacturers.
Yes, sorry.
No, all good. I think that's so important that that's what you're essentially able to replicate, but refurbed and remanned for your clients. I interrupted though. You had another thought.
And so that's a big thing to understand when it comes to remanufacturing is that we need great manufacturing as well.
Yeah.
Right? And so... Not everyone is going to invest in, again, that's why we can't do everything as a remanufactured option, right?
Right.
Currently. It's just not going to work. But the best thing a company can do if you're not, you know, doing a percentage of reuse or reman is making sure that you buy quality product that can be given multiple uses at the end of its life. And not just that components get recycled or most of the time it's discarded in a landfill.
What are you all excited about in the industry now that you're seeing? I mean, you said tenders are getting a little bit more prescriptive when it comes to remanufacturing that's needed to sort of service the role or the job. What else is there in terms of what's being or what's growing? Fewer fast furniture vendors?
No.
Okay, well, what's...
No, yeah,
what's,
unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Not yet. I'm not seeing that. And that goes across the board with commercial and obviously residential is another big problem, right?
Yeah.
And it's in everything. It's in fashion. It's in, you know, it's, we've got to get ourselves out of that mind
frame.
Quite
pervasive, yes.
Yeah. But quality product costs money, right? And the other hard thing that's happening is that, yeah, people aren't necessarily willing to spend an extreme amount of money.
Right.
When they don't know what their workspace is supposed to do for them in the next couple of years. And
yeah,
so
that's kind of interesting that the thought of the value is, well, the value maybe wasn't clear. I think those can who appreciate it understand the value of some of the top manufacturers. But it's really interesting that the value is now even more in question when they don't know what the value of the space means to
right.
the workforce.
Right.
And so now it's like, oh, this would have been so easy for someone to sign on the dotted line for that, you know, couple $1,000 chair plus workstation.
Right.
And now it's a little bit different when it's the whole system's in question. What's being done essentially to reassure or to say, hey, no, this is still of quality because you're not just investing in the opportunity for quality for your workforce, for the employees, but now you're also investing in the secondary market where you might be able to recoup, or is that a part of the conversation where it's like, hey, this is what you're accounting for. You might get this back either on the secondary market or through a refurbishment remanufacturing capability where that's going to save you 5 years down the line.
That's what I think the main manufacturers, that's how they promote their products.
That's how they promote it? Okay.
But it's impossible in some ways for them to ensure that.
Right.
Right? So it's just, you can say something has an end of life strategy of what they're going to do when it's finished. But they don't have anything to do with that for the most part. Unless they... And that's the whole furniture as a service. Unless they took it back themselves, well, then they're just dependent on someone like us to come around and know the client and take it.
And I think that's actually, if you could get into that, because that's super helpful for any listener to understand, is all of these industries have many stakeholders in them. Furniture just being not any more complicated than many other distribution dealership type models. But could you go through that a little bit and explain what that chain looks like, where it starts from an original manufacturer and then who touches it along the way until you all might come in and say, hey, we can actually help do this from a refurb and reman capability?
Okay, so it's important to know that in commercial office furniture, it's, for the most part, a dealership model. So there's what they're called mainline manufacturers, Hayworth, Steelcase, Herman Miller, Technion. I'm saying Herman Miller. They're called Miller Knoll now.
Miller Knoll, because Knoll.
Sorry.
No, that's a.
I should know after NeoCon, but.
Yeah. So just for the listener, then, that was a classic acquisition where yes. It's now. Before we get into that, did that make Miller Knoll now one of the biggest? I mean, that now they. Where's Steelcase? So what's
Steelcase
the ranking
still
here?
The biggest,
Steelcase,
I believe. Now Miller Knoll,
Hayworth?
Then I don't know the last one.
Okay, then it's just like kind of, got it. So that's dealership model.
So they're the manufacturers, and they don't sell direct to a client. They sell through dealers. And dealers typically align with one of those main ones, and you can't sell another one. So if you're a Steelcase dealer, you can't sell Herman Miller. You can sell a number of other open line manufacturers. That you can offer your clients. But so step two is through the dealers is where I'm going with that. So the manufacturers make the product, but and they can say whatever they want for their end of life, and they'll certify the product and go through all that. But then it goes directly to a dealer. Okay? The dealer is the one who's buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dealer is the one selling it to that client. And the dealer, for the most part, I mean, manufacturers do. I'm keep in touch with certain large clients, but the dealer is the one who manages the relationship with the client. And so when it comes time to get rid of product or to move on to the next office or whatever refresh or change is happening, that dealer is going to find out about it. And typically dealers, you're always trying to sell something new. Yeah. that's just business how it goes, right?
Well, that's
and so
growth. In this context.
And so, you know, you got an old space or you're moving. And that's the worst part is that sometimes moving is it's more costly to relocate than to just get rid of stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. And so, so a lot of the times it's just discarded. And I can't speak for everyone, but I don't think there's a point that, you know, at the end of the road there, it's let's call like, what's the end of life?
Right.
It's just, you're deep into a project at that point. And the contractor added something in the line where it says, oh, yeah, that it'll be removed. It's just too cheap to throw things out.
Yeah.
It's not enough of a cost to make people go, whoa, that's expensive. Like, we cannot pay those types of fees to throw out a floor of furniture.
Yeah.
Right? It would blow your mind how cheap it is.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, not just with furniture, with everything.
With everything,
It's too cheap to throw things away. And so if it's too cheap and currently more inefficient to start looking and finding ulterior ways that you can, then people aren't, they're not going to be motivated to do it.
It's the path of least resistance for waste and material flow, yeah.
And that's what's so exciting about, you know, if you change that, and obviously people want, I think, to do something better for the environment, you know, better holistically for themselves and the planet, they want to do it. They just want someone to make it easy for them. They want someone to make it fun. They want someone to make it fresh, right?
Right.
And if remanufacturing and reuse and the circular economy that we're always talking about achieves that for them, well, then that's it. That's what needs to happen. And the innovation on how to work with the products will figure itself out after that, I think.
Well, I think that's what we would like to keep pursuing here at Reaply.
Absolutely.
You gave some great words of parting wisdom there, I think, on the system, what more people can be thinking around, again, the products or even just waste in general or what it means to throw something out. Any other last thoughts? Coming out of NeoCon, design, what are you seeing maybe too? What would you want to leave everyone with?
Well, obviously everyone is trying to create, it's funny, every product, the trend is agility, right? Everything needs to be flexible. It needs to be, if this was the wrong product this year that you bought for your workplace, well, you can change it next year and like, you don't have to throw it out. So it's like, they're thinking about it in that same sense, right? Of like, this is a product that hopefully will grow with you as we figure out what the heck the workplace of the future is, right? So,
and that was a flexibility, modularity type conversation where it's like rearranging at all times. Yeah.
Okay. It's most furniture is module, but now it's more of the actual like desks and workspaces are kind of moving, you know, and you can reconfigure a room very easily. Yeah. Whereas before you're like getting an electrician to like, you know,
rewire some,
yeah,
like the whole floor.
And, yeah. Yeah, okay. So, That's what I noticed as a trend at Neocon this year. And I think that's a great thing. I think that that means that people are thinking about, okay, we need to make sure that our products that we're putting in our spaces are able to adapt and grow with us as we figure out this new way to work. If we take that one step further and say, okay, we're creating products that are going to adapt and grow with how we work, let's also make sure they adapt and grow for the planet. Let's make sure that we're investing in products and solutions that, you know, are not fast furniture, that are not, you know, made to fall apart in 3 to 5 years.
That can evolve with us.
And that can evolve, and that really do have, you know, an end of life that is feasible to achieve, right? And I think if we're able to make that the norm, then it'll be an exciting couple of years to figure out this new way of work, right? Like, everyone wants to know what it is. You know,
yep.
We don't know.
Yeah.
No one knows. And that's great. And I think that's going to provide a lot of opportunity to do things differently.
Thanks for joining.
Pleasure to be here, man.
Thanks, everybody, for listening and watching. See you next week.